This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, the Hockey News Podcast is back. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. You know, it's the quiet season, but that doesn't mean there aren't still some news breaks. Unfortunately, the biggest news break over the weekend is some sad news. Hockey World lost Ray Emery in a surprise drowning accident. At this point, I mean, there aren't too many details about his death yet. But in terms of just remembering Ray Emery, what comes to mind when you think of Emery and sort of how he'll be remembered as a player?
Well, for me, it was the 06-07 season with the Ottawa Senators when he, you know, when that team that had been building for so long, you know, they had been building something for so long, and they finally made it to the final. They didn't, you know, they didn't obviously didn't win the final and were decidedly the second best team in that series. But that was a pretty tight, pretty special group of guys. And, you know, Emery was probably, you know, here's a guy who came from some pretty humble circumstances, you know, raised by a single mom and in the Hamilton area, you know, and sort of scratched and clawed his way up through minor hockey and wasn't a kid that sort of had everything handed to him on a silver platter, was a late pick, you know, wasn't really highly regarded until, you know, sort of he got into his 20s and then, you know, was probably one of the best goalies in the NHL for a period of 2 or 3 years. You know, I didn't talk to him a lot. I talked to him a couple of times. He always seemed pretty engaging. He was one of those guys that you never really knew. Like, something would come out of his mouth and it would be some kind of sort of dry, under the radar kind of thing that he'd say. And then afterwards you'd go, wow, that was pretty funny. you know, I mean, I know, you know, he was a guy who showed up in a snowmobile once to... a game in Ottawa. Yeah, he wheels in on a snowmobile. So, you know, a character, a different cat who took a different route to the NHL. And, you know, I mean, anytime someone loses their life at 35 under those circumstances, it's, you know, a huge tragedy for the hockey world and obviously for his family who, you know, I think all our hearts go out to everyone who was touched by this.
For sure.
Yeah, I had much the same experience. I always felt that... You know, Emery, he really, you know, opened up in interviews. He gave you good stuff. He was, you know, very, you know, cordial when it came to that. And it was kind of fun because, you know, on the ice, he had that great, passionate personality to him. You know, best fighting goalie of all time.
Right. You know? That's what I was going to say. That's what I'm going to remember Ray Emery as.
Yeah.
The toughest goalie ever.
Yeah. The guy that, you know... saw Andrew Peters and was like, yeah, I want to fight you right now. I've already fought a goalie. That was nothing to me. I want to fight an actual enforcer. He did it with a smile.
And he was smiling the whole time. Like a maniacal smile. Yeah.
He loved it.
Yeah.
He was like, this is what I've been building towards, you know? And, you know, you look at a lot of guys from the Ontario area that knew him from, you know, either playing together growing up or, you know, NHL players always get together for camps during the summer just to train and stuff, and all of them had great memories of him. And I think that's the thing is, you know, he was a guy that inspired a lot of love in the dressing room. Mm-hmm. And for me too, I remember, you know, that lockout year, the lockout shortened season when he was with the Blackhawks, you know, Corey Crawford ended up being their goalie in the playoffs and they won the Stanley Cup, but Ray Emery was almost unbeatable that year. 1.94 goals mm-hmm. against average, 922 save percentage.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Dan, I mean, when he was on, he was a pretty fantastic goaltender.
And I think Emery, in a way, too, was ahead of his time. I mean, obviously, one of the few black players in the league at his time, and he was a guy who wasn't afraid to show personality, and sometimes I think hockey culture wasn't really ready for him, mm-hmm. but I think you can make a case that he sort of laid some foundation for guys like PK Subban today that are black players and role models that are showcasing more of their personality. And I think in the era of social media, it's more accepted today, but Emery was one of the first guys to really do that and just, you know, wear some crazy suits and have some swagger.
Yeah.
I feel like it wasn't always well received at the time, but if he was a rookie today, he might have been a better fit for the modern game.
Yeah, and I think he was a guy too that really, you know, he worked at his craft. He was a guy who I think really dedicated himself to being, you know, tremendously fit, first of all. And then, you know, worked with Eli Wilson a lot, you know, during his career. And I think was a guy who really cared about becoming better and not just sort of relying on his natural gifts and becoming, you know, he actually became a, you know, became an NHL goaltender, if you will, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I remember talking to him once in a hotel lobby in Toronto, and my theory about the Ottawa Senators was, and I think it was in the year that they went to the final, I said, you guys aren't going to win a Stanley Cup until you beat the Leafs in a playoff round. And then you will be unstoppable. And he looked and he sort of said, yeah, he said, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Kind of like Washington beating Pittsburgh.
Right,
this year,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, our hearts go out to anyone who's been affected by Emery's death, and rest in peace, Ray. Let's move on to some trade talk, or at least trade scuttlebutt. And this is one, I don't know about you guys, but I get asked about this one all the time. And I don't know if I have the answer. And the question is, what is Montreal doing with Max Pacioretty? Specifically, why are they reducing their leverage by openly admitting that Pacioretty is not going to be re-signed? Does that not drop his value? And what do you think is going to happen? Is Max Pacioretty going to get traded before the season starts?
Well, first of all, they haven't openly admitted that he's not going to be re-signed. It was one of those sort of back channel things that got out.
Yeah, yeah.
So they haven't openly admitted it.
Somebody admitted it to somebody.
Yeah, somebody admitted it to somebody. But I don't get any of this. I don't get any of this. Mm. I don't get a single bit of this Max Pacioretty stuff. He's a 30 goal scorer, except with the exception of last year, he's a 30 to 35 goal scorer. He's a good captain. He wants to be there. He lives there year round. His family is there. He's invested in the community. He does all the, you know, charitable stuff. He represents the Canadians well. And he's a good player and a good leader. And all they seem to want to do is run him out of town. And I, for the life of me, I don't understand why a team that can barely score is saying, yeah, we don't want a 30-goal scoring winger on our team. I don't get it. I don't get it for a second.
It's really hard to figure out what Montreal's strategy is, because you're right. They seem to chase talent out of town. And when you looked at the PK Subban trade, it was like, okay, well, maybe there are some personality clashes, or there's a divide in the leadership in the room. And but that would make you think, okay, well, Pacioretty's the captain. He must be the obvious guy that they want to hold on to. But now they're just, you know, throwing down the kerosene again and getting ready to strike the match. The only thing I can think of, and I just thought of this right now, is could they do a Pacioretty for Panarin trade? Would that help out both Columbus and Montreal? Maybe there's a, you know, a high draft pick that goes with Pacioretty, because Panarin's obviously younger and better at this point.
Interesting. In Montreal, I mean, you got some water. It's not an ocean, but you've got, what is it? What water you want? St. Lawrence River?
St. Lawrence River.
Right. Yeah, so there you go, Artemi. Yeah. It's a start. And I wonder, too, at this point, so we know there are certain teams hunting for left wingers. Los Angeles got Ilya Kovalchuk. Florida got Mike Hoffman. Those would have been two good landing spots for Max Pacioretty. So the market for him won't be as big as it was even a few weeks ago. So if you're the Habs, might you be, now that it's out, now that the cat's out of the bag, that he's a rental, or that he's on the block, do you wait until the trade deadline? Do you start the year with Pacioretty in your lineup? Mm. And then do you hope to get more bidders coming in March? Or do you think the goal is to trade him before the season starts?
I think if you've made up your mind that you're going to trade him, I think you have to do it sooner rather than later. I mean, as much as, you know, I mean, even if he has a great year and drives up the market, you know, as a rental at the trade deadline, teams are not going to be willing to give up as much as they will now because they'll have, you know, this whole year to be able to try to come to an agreement with them, or maybe they come to an agreement beforehand. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think if you're down that road and that's what you're going to do, then you have to deal them as soon as you can.
Right. And I wonder, I mean, to me, if you're thinking about who are the fits right now for Pacioretty, I mean, some people would have said the Oilers a while back, but now Nugent Hopkins seems to be established as McDavid's left winger. But I'm looking at Chicago. They move out some money with that Hossa trade, and Vinny Hinostroza was playing their top six. Yeah. So there's a wing spot open in that top six, unless you move Nick Schmaltz up and have him playing the wing. But to me, that sounds like a really nice fit. And Chicago's a team that, like, they're clearly going for broke now. They're at the end of their run. Their prospect cupboard is pretty bare.
Yep.
So do you just kind of gut what's left of your prospect system and find a piece that can get you Pacioretty and add him to your top six, for even if it's for 1 year? Do you think Chicago would be the ideal fit?
I don't know. Would it be the ideal fit? Because it's not a team that...
They're not going to be...
Are they going to be that much better with Max Pacioretty? I mean, we know that.
I think a lot of
people in this room actually think that Chicago's going to bottom out this year.
Yeah. I think if you're going to bottom out, you might as well bottom out. What about Pittsburgh, though?
Yeah, Pittsburgh would make a lot of sense, too.
Because they need wingers.
Yeah, and for Pittsburgh's still good enough. Pittsburgh's like Chicago 2 years ago, maybe. Yeah. Where they're going the same... Like, eventually, when Crosby and Malkin age out, Penguins are going to crash as well. But they're still a lot more competitive than Chicago. So Pacioretty could make them a cup contender again.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That one I can see. The only problem there is Pittsburgh also has a very bare cupboard. So you'd have to trade somebody back the other way. Phil Kessel? I'm just throwing out... I'm just hot stoving it this whole block.
What about Daniel Sprong? Do you go Daniel Sprong for Pacioretty?
Ooh. I don't know if that's enough for Montreal. Even though Sprong played in the queue. If I'm Montreal, I don't know if I can trade a 30-goal scoring captain for...
I think people would be out with tiki torches if that happened. Or at least...
Not necessarily straight up.
I think the fan base would lose their collective poop if they traded Max Pacioretty for Daniel Sprong. I think they would want Mark Bergevin's head on a platter.
Like Sprong and a first rounder for...
Oh, okay. Well, that's different. That's different.
So Sprong being the main roster player.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
To me, it's interesting, and this is a sort of a segue to our next trade candidate. But to me, it sounds like when a guy's got several years left on his deal, or even, let's say, two or more, it's understandable what the stakes are in the trade. And if a guy's a rental at the deadline, it's pretty easy to figure out what's a fair price. Mm-hmm. But to me, this one-year rental is complicated. Because you don't know if you're going to extend the guy, what's a fair price, you're only getting him for 1 year. Yep. But it seems like these deals are hard to make, and we're seeing the same thing with Erik Karlsson in Ottawa. And this is the other question that's on everyone's mind. Is the Karlsson trade going to get done? It was reported as almost done in Dallas, almost done in Tampa Bay, and neither rumor turned out to be true. So do you guys think that Karlsson is going to get traded, first off?
I don't know. I'm going to say right here, I don't know. And I'm also going to say, you don't know. I don't even know if Pierre Dorion knows. Certainly the people covering these teams don't know. I mean, I think anybody who can sit here and say with certainty that Erik Karlsson's going to get traded before the season, I think it's just blowing it out their keister.
Yeah.
Really. To be honest with you, because there are so many moving parts. It's such a difficult trade to make. There's so much emotion involved. You know, this is a really, really, like, complicated transaction that, you know, obviously they've tried to take a couple of runs at it already. And today, are we any closer? Like, I think we're further away today than we were a couple of weeks ago to him being traded.
Yeah.
You know, you're not hearing anything now. So the answer is I don't know if he's going to be moved. I said a couple of weeks on the podcast that I thought he'd be playing for the Ottawa Senators next year. And I'm still inclined to think that.
I feel that the potential Dallas negotiations are a pretty good example of what you were talking about, Matt, about the problem of a guy with 1 year left on his deal, a kind of rental, but not really. You know, if we go by some of the reports that were out there, Ottawa wanted Miro Heiskanen, Dallas said Julius Honka. And that's a pretty big gap
in terms of potential. That's a massive gap. Yeah.
That's a gulf.
Yeah.
And so if you're Ottawa, you say, like, okay, but we can't trade the best player we've ever had for a prospect that hasn't shown he can be a top pairing defenseman already. We need at least that potential. And Dallas is saying, well, we're not going to trade one of our best prospects in years for a guy that might leave us after one season, if things don't go the way
I think you have to assume that there's going to be some kind of agreement in place that he's going to sign before you make that deal. Right. I think that has to be, and I think that's part of what is making this such a difficult deal to make. And yes, Ryan, you're absolutely right. For anybody who's listening, yes, Erik Karlsson is the best player the Senators have ever had. He's the greatest player in franchise history. Daniel Alfredsson even said it himself. So if you think that it's different, that it's Daniel Alfredsson, just be quiet.
Of course, I mean, to me,
and look at the trophies.
Yeah, look at
the,
and then I mean, Karlsson should have. He has two Norai. I think he should have four Norai, but that's neither here nor there.
At least three. At least, definitely.
And to me, it's. I mean, we don't know exactly what's happening, but I think you guys are right. If I'm going to speculate, I think it's that the Senators are holding out for that big time prospect or even established young players. So in Tampa Bay, I'm going to assume it's Tampa offering Cal Foot and Ottawa saying, no, we want Sergachev.
Right.
And if an extension is in the offing, I think good for you, Pierre Dorion, because a lot of people are saying he has no leverage. But if there's an extension that's going to happen as part of the trade, you do have some leverage.
He has leverage.
Yeah.
He's got one of the best players in the world.
That's the thing.
He's still Erik Karlsson. Best players in the world. He's got Erik Karlsson. Yeah. That gives him leverage.
Right. And you can always take another kick at the can. Like, if you're going to get, if you're getting a Julius Honka for Erik Karlsson, then get that in March when he's a true rental. Yeah. But if you're trying to trade him in the summer, it sounds funny. It's embarrassing for Dorion to say, but he's probably learned from the Matt Duchene trade to make sure you get a good haul.
All I could think of when they were talking about that three-way trade with the Rangers was like, three-way trades don't go very well for Ottawa. You had the one with Nashville with Kyle Turris, and then you had what was essentially a three-way trade for Mike Hoffman that came back and bit Ottawa. I know they didn't know it was a three-way trade when they made with San Jose, but that's how it turned out, so... If I'm Pierre Dorion, my next trade has a stipulation that says you can't trade that guy to another team for a year or we get your next three first rounders.
All right, we're going to do some reader questions now. And I think I'm going to butcher this name. I'm going to try it, and I'm really sorry to this person. Vith Vichy. I'm sorry, Vith.
Or Vite.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
I think it's
VJ is the last name.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Vite VJ. It's someone whose initials are VV, and we apologize if we just destroyed your name. But
the question, double V. And in Quebec, he'd be Dubé.
The question from
Dubé,
yeah, that's right. The question from Double V is, can you talk about the top three draft prospects for 2019? Who do you guys feel will be going first, second, and third overall, and why? I think it's pretty clear who's going to be number one, but Ryan, as the draft guy, let's lead it off with you here.
Yeah, so Jack Hughes is the guy that everyone's talking about, and rightfully so. Plays for the NTDP, for USA Hockey. For me, I've watched him for a couple of years now. I think he's the next Patrick Kane. They're about the same size, but the difference is I believe Jack Hughes will be a center at the NHL level. Obviously, Patrick Kane has had a fantastic career as a winger, but I think Hughes will be that center. He's just so talented, so dynamic, so slippery. The first time I saw him live was when he was playing minor midget in Toronto. And every time he got the puck, it was either a scoring chance or a penalty for the other team because nobody could get a beat on him. Just a fantastic player. Second player I'll mention, and we actually had him ranked a little bit lower in draft preview for 2019, but Kaapo Kakko from Finland, plays for TPS. One of the junior league's top scorers this year, has played up in terms of his age internationally. A lot of the times with Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who Montreal took third overall, just a fantastic scoring winger. I'm not saying he's the next Patrick Laine, but it's hard to say, you know, Finnish winger with great scoring potential and not think Laine right now. But this kid's got a ton of potential, and I think we'll see him continue to climb the ranks. If he develops the way we think he will. Third player I'll mention is Alex Newhook, who is a Boston College commit playing for Victoria in the BCHL. Pretty incredible because he's not a huge kid, not small, but he was one of the BCHL's top scorers this year. Missed some time due to an injury at the end, but he did that as a 16-year-old. And the BCHL, I would say, is... if not the best junior A league, then it's second to the Alberta League, depending on what year you're talking about. But for him to do what he did with Victoria at his age is really impressive. He's the kind of kid that does everything fast, and I almost see him as like a better Robbie Fabry at this point. Again, a little bit bigger, and I think the upside is such that you say, like, wow, like this is a kid that... you know, when he doesn't have the puck, he's going to get the puck, and he uses his speed to do it. And that's what kind of reminded me of Fabry when he was just coming up with the Blues. But Newhook, I think he's going to put up some devastating numbers for Victoria again this year, and that'll help put him in that top echelon.
I mean, beyond Jack Hughes, I can't tell you a thing, to be honest with you. I'm not going to lie.
This time of year,
Beyond Jack Hughes, all I can tell you is, Ryan, can you give me a guy, a name of a guy who's maybe in the mid-20s right now?
In the mid-20s or 2019?
For 2019, yeah.
Just for fun, we'll say Archer Kaliev with Hamilton.
Okay, he's going to be a top three guy. He's going to be a top three guy because it always happens.
You know, some
guy jumps up that nobody really thought of, and he has a great Ivan Holinka, and then he has even a better start to the season, and he's great, and he ends up scoring 88 points or 90 points.
The year before.
So that's my guy.
Actually, one more name that could sort of fit there, and I don't know how everybody else has him, but Maciej Kajkiewicz, the Slovakian kid that was taken number one overall by St. John in the import draft. He is coming over. He had a great under-18s for Slovakia, one of the top scorers in the tourney. Him coming to North America, I think, will enable him to get used to things over here, but also put up a lot of points and get more of a spotlight. So that would be a fun one.
So my three guys are Jack Hughes and those two guys.
Those two guys,
And it's interesting, too, because especially with Hughes and Newhook, two kids under 6 feet, and the trend continues. We've seen it in recent drafts with defensemen like Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes, but now we're seeing it with a couple forwards. I mean, I know there was Patrick Kane, Mitch Marner, but I think, again, it's becoming more and more of a trend. You don't have to be the big monster anymore. It's fascinating. Even guys like Newhook, like 10 years ago, they might not have been able to make the same impact, and especially Jack Hughes. I mean, Jack Hughes now, it's like there's an open road for him to be a monster scorer that people probably wouldn't have perceived as available 10 years ago. So it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, you can't stop what you can't catch.
That's right, exactly. Next question is from Jared Moss. And Jared says, when will Houston get an NHL team? I'll start with this one because I've been trying to push this theory for a while. If Seattle's coming in to the Pacific Division, that gives you 9 teams. The Central has 7 teams. Houston's in a central time zone. So to me, it's logical to move the Arizona Coyotes to Houston. And then they're in the Central Division. Then you've got a nice balance of 8 teams. Houston's a big market. And I know some people are saying, well, Arizona, maybe there's potential for it to finally become a hockey town, but they think there's still hope there, especially when you got a guy like Austin Matthews that comes out of there.
But I don't think that makes one iota of difference. I don't think it moves a needle at all.
Yeah. So to me, that would be the move. Move Arizona to Houston.
That sounds like the way you would want to go with this. They don't have an arena yet. They aren't drawing well in the arena they're in. There doesn't seem to be a lot of oomph in that market. But, you know, guys, I don't understand the NHL this way. We've been saying for 10 years that Arizona is going to / should move, and they still haven't. So I don't know that it's that. Like, I suppose if Houston's going to get a team, that's how it's going to happen. But for me to say that's going to happen within the next 2 years, the next 5 years, the next 8 years, the next 10 years, I don't know. Because there's one thing that Gary Bettman's really, really good at. Well, there's a lot of things he's really good at. But one of them is finding really rich guys to take teams that are undervalued and have them stick with them and turn them around in a lot of cases. So there may be a guy out there who's got a ton of money that wants to get a toy, and maybe he wants to buy a team, and Gary Bettman tells him, yeah, look, okay, so the guy in Arizona has no money, so you're going to go in, you're going to be the owner, but you got to keep the team there. And he'll say, yeah, okay, I'll make it work somehow. I hate to keep saying I don't know, but I don't know that you can make a bold proclamation about any of this stuff.
No.
Houston will be in the league at some point. It's gone X number of years without being in the league. It's now on the radar. They've got an owner
of
the basketball team that wants, and that helps. That certainly helps. But, I mean, is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? Is it 20 years? I don't know.
Yeah, I feel that it is important to distinguish that it's probably going to be a relocation if Houston's going to get a team, because with Seattle, 32 is just such a good, clean number. Four divisions, eight teams, yeah. Or eight divisions of four teams. No, I'm just kidding. But you could, I mean, that's what the NFL does.
Yeah,
isn't
right.
It? Right.
That's what the World Cup does.
Sure. People like that. But I feel that that's the amount of talent we have in hockey. If you win any more, you're getting into, like, you know, desperate territory, especially because the KHL is a viable option, at least for a couple of teams right now. But so for Houston, they are definitely, you know, in the waiting room right now.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I wonder, too, if maybe the time to do a relocation would be coming out of the next lockout, because whatever fan base you've built up, I say that with air quotes, in Arizona, it might finally die out if you lose a year of hockey. Maybe that's the time to make your move to Houston.
But the league as a whole came back stronger than it ever had after the last full season lockout.
Mm. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot more to it than we know and we can understand. There are, you know, lease agreements and all these other sorts of things that have to happen. But, you know, I mean, but by the same token, you know, Atlanta needed a place to go and needed to get out of Dodge, and there was a place. Mm-hmm. So I think, first of all, it's incumbent upon Houston having a building that, I mean, you can't even think about getting a team now in the NHL without having the building first.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah.
Like, they won't even consider it. Relocation, expansion, nothing. You have to have at least plans in place to have a building in place. So that's the first thing they have to do. And then you're kind of hoping that the Arizona situation becomes like an Atlanta situation where it's like, the Wolves are on the doorstep here. We got to get out of here.
Right.
And we need a place where we can go real quick. We can hit the ground running.
Exactly. So, I think that's the scenario.
Yeah.
I'd personally love to see a Houston team, and then I feel like Ottawa and Quebec City would be pretty interesting too. And then that you don't have to change divisions for that either.
Yep.
That would be kind of a neat, you know, by 2025, if that's your configuration, I think it could work. Next question is from Russell Hartman. How big of an impact will Philip Chytil, or as Ryan says, Chytil, and Elias Anderson have for the Rangers next season? Can they be a surprise team similar to the Devils this past season?
Yeah, I think if they're going to be a surprise, that's going to be the route. I think the good thing about Anderson and Chytil is, A, both of them have already made their NHL debuts. So they know what it's all about. You know, they've had a little bit of experience.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that's really nice is both of them are two-way players. These are guys that obviously they're going to get better as the years go on, but at least now their games are already rounded. Like, you're not looking at them and seeing a big deficiency. And I think with Chytil in particular, the defensive side, when he got those games right at the beginning of the season, that was a nice wake-up call for him. And he took that experience for the rest of his season. I think for both of them, you're looking at players that could really energize a franchise that right now is in a rebuild and is in need of a bit of a push. And I think when you bring in those young guys that are hungry and passionate, that can have a really positive impact on your roster. I think, you know, for either of them, maybe you're looking at sort of 45, 50 points this year.
Wow, that many for those
guys? Well, you know, at the high end, right?
Yeah,
I mean, if they get a good role,
if
they give them the ice time and they really come in, and they can, again, they can be energizers. I think that it's going to be tough for the Rangers in that division to make the playoffs, but I think they're on the right path. I think what Jeff Gorton has done since he took over as GM has been really savvy. I mean, he's looked at how teams get successful in the NHL, and he's following that template. He's getting lots of high picks.
Yep.
You know, he's getting the guys he wants. You know, I'm thinking about Vitali Kravtsov, them taking him, you know, in the top 10, where, you know, they did not fear the Russian factor. They said, we thought he was the second best forward in the draft, so we're taking him. I like when teams are bold like that. And I think Anderson and Chytil are kind of the tip of the spear, and New York's going to get more good young players in the 2019 draft as well. They're already set up nicely in the 2019 draft.
Yeah, I don't think that the Rangers are going to be the Devils from last year. And I think for a couple of reasons. Number one is say what you want about Taylor Hall, but Taylor Hall doing what he did this year was not a huge surprise. Like, it was a big surprise, but you could see that happening.
He
right?
was the first overall pick.
Yeah, the talent was always there. Yeah, the talent was always there. It was a matter of, you know, directing it in the right way and sort of getting his headspace out of getting traded
being
and
healthy.
The whole deal. Yeah, being healthy, the whole deal. So there was that. There was Nico Hischier. There was, you know, they were there. I look at that roster that the Rangers have, and I mean, there was way more talent on the Devils last year than there is on this roster. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. Ken is looking at the Rangers depth chart right now. You're wondering why he's making that sense.
Yeah. Like, I think Matt Zuccarello is going to be traded at the trade deadline.
Right. And UFA. Even Kevin Hayes is a guy, he's an RFA, but he's a guy to me that might have peaked.
Yep.
He doesn't play as big as he is.
And I will say one thing, too, is that part of the problem with the Rangers is that what do you do if Henrik Lundqvist continues to regress?
Or age.
Age might be the right word. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to keep playing him. That's the problem. You kind of have to keep playing him, mm-hmm. right? Because he's King Henrik.
And he said he doesn't want to leave.
Right. And so what do you do in that situation?
I think what you do is you first recognize that this rebuild that they're doing is going to take years. And all rebuilds do. Let's not forget this. They mm-hmm. all take years. Mm-hmm. I think the best case scenario, if you're the Rangers, is, you know, Igor Shesterkin comes over in a couple of years, gets some AHL experience, and then he starts getting some starts with Lundqvist, and eventually he takes over. And this is a process that takes years. So I think the best case scenario for New York is that everything just kind of solves itself.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Lundqvist, by the end of his career, he's a backup to Shesterkin.
Right.
Or Olaf Lindblom.
He's got 3 years left on his deal, eh, guys?
He does.
3 years.
But Shesterkin's not over here yet. He's still under contract in Russia. And then you want to make sure that he gets used to North America, so you send him to Hartford. By then, Lundqvist, the deal's done, or it's almost done, and you've got your legacy plan figured out, or at least you hope.
To be honest with you guys, I think the New York Rangers doing what the Devils did last year could be the absolute worst thing that could happen to the New York Rangers.
That's true.
Yeah, that's the absolute worst thing that could happen to them. Yeah, that would be the absolute... No, but not just for that, Matt. I think you know, that's a market where, okay, that people start to see, oh, this team's getting better, you know, and then they start to think there's something they're not, and it just becomes a one-off, which might actually be what happened to the Devils. Like, that might...
Although, to Shiro's credit, though, he didn't make any moves this offseason.
Yeah, right.
Play
exactly.
In the long con.
Yeah. But I think actually that would probably be a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the Rangers, because then you start to get tempted to go, oh, okay, maybe this thing's going quicker than we thought. Maybe we were better than we thought, and maybe you're not.
Yeah.
And then you stick with guys, or you go out and get guys. I wouldn't want, if I were a Ranger fan looking at the long-term game, I don't think I'd want that to happen.
Well, it's like when the Leafs, like the Kessel, Dion Phaneuf Leafs had that one playoff season, and they signed Phaneuf to the huge extension, and then obviously because they weren't as good as they thought they were.
Right.
To me, if there's a team in the East that's going to be the surprise out of nowhere, fast rebuilder, this year, I think it's going to be Buffalo. Because you get to beat up on Montreal, Detroit, and Ottawa in the Atlantic. Yes, the top of the division's tough, but that's okay. Yeah. You've got Mittelstadt now centering your second line for a full season. You got defensive insulation, even though you lose O'Reilly. You've got Patrick Berglund, Vladimir Sobotka. You've got Carter Hutton, who, again, is probably going to be better than Robin Lehner was last year.
Yep.
You've got Rasmus Dahlin, who, again, we have to temper our expectations for an 18-year-old defenseman, but this is a generational talent by most accounts. Yep. He's going to make your team better.
At his position,
yeah. Most hyped defenseman.
Yeah,
since Denny Potvin, right?
Yeah, okay.
And you've added Connor Sheary. You've added so many pieces to that lineup. And again, I'm not putting Buffalo in the playoffs, but if there is a team, just to answer that question, Russell Hartman's question, if there's going to be the team that, oh my God, these guys are way ahead of schedule.
I
think it's going to be Buffalo, and maybe it's Casey Mittelstadt winning the Calder Trophy, having a great year. That's the team I'm looking at in the East.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yep.
Well, the time to speculate on games is not quite here yet as the summer progresses. But we'll have some more trade scuttlebutt, I'm sure, next time. And thanks for listening, everybody.